the IP had just gone through. So it was one of these things where I kind of was excited to, you know, get in there and start taking off these competitors. And as you saw, you know, right before, a whole bunch of the competitors got knocked off the platform and the sales are shot through the roof. So, you know, that got me even more excited to say, well, this is just the beginning, right?
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
In every situation, I ask myself, WWSCBFBBD. What would Super Colossal Big Fan Boss Baby do?
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Okay, recently, Joe, I know that you had Nick from The Beard King on the podcast to talk about selling The Beard King. And today we have part two. You have Raj on, who bought The Beard King.
Yeah, it's a great follow-up. The first one, we get to see it from the seller's perspective, and now we get to see it from the buyer's perspective. And Raj is pretty impressive. He's a young guy. He's in his mid-20s, law school dropout that became an entrepreneur. He was going to law school and building Amazon businesses along the way, and realized that there was just no way he was going to make as much money in law school with the demands of law school and life in general afterwards as he is as an entrepreneur. And this is the first sizable one that he's purchased, and he goes through the process of the hunt for finding the right business, some of the criteria he was looking for, and some of the changes he's going to make to The Beard King to help grow it over the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, you told me before that he had been looking for quite a while for a business, and he looked at, what was it, like 30 or 40 different businesses before he pulled the trigger on this one?
Yeah, exactly. And he'd made a couple of offers on other ones that we had listed, just wasn't in the right place at the right time in order to make it happen. So this one I think is going to work out great. As the audience knows that listened to the first one, there's a lot of IP around this one with utility patents, design patents. And it's a big reason why Raj jumped on this one fairly quickly.
Very good. Let's get right to it.
Let's go.
Hey, folks. Joe Valley here from Quiet Light Brokerage and the Quiet Light Podcast. Today, I have Raj Patel on the line with me. He bought The Beard King. We had Nick on the podcast last week talking about his exit as a seller. Today, we've got the buyer. Raj, welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joe. How are you?
I'm good, man. But where's the beard? I mean, we chatted last week. There was a little bit of stubble. I was expecting a big, bushy beard today. What's going on?
Unfortunately, I am not the beard king. I can't grow a great beard, but, you know, I do know business, though. That's my thing.
You do know business, that's for sure. And at a young age, so we're going to get into that a little bit as well. Why don't you tell everybody listening who you are, what you're all about, what your background is?
Yeah, pretty much my name is Raj Patel, and I've been doing about e-commerce. It's my fifth year in, I would say. And, you know, I primarily do Amazon FBA, but I own a couple of sites as well that we do direct to website sales as well, like Shopify and those platforms. But yeah, primarily we're doing about 80% of my revenue is coming through Amazon FBA right now. And, you know, riding this wave of how well e-commerce is really doing, and this market is just exploding right now.
And if I recall from our conversations, you're 25 years old and we're on the path to become an attorney and said, I can't do that. I'm not going to make enough money. I want to be independent. I want to be an entrepreneur and live this life. Is that right?
Right. That's pretty much true. Yeah. I'm just turned 26, but it was one of those things where I was making more money while I was in school than I would probably make with the job after I graduate. So it was kind of one of those things that didn't quite make any sense for me to continue that path. And, you know, I was enjoying what I was doing. I got to travel. I'm still traveling all the time and, you know, kind of reaping the perks and just growing businesses, you know.
How many have you purchased? Was Beard King the first actual purchase, or were the other two or three that you might own purchases as well, or did you develop those from scratch?
So I developed two from scratch, and those are the ones I started with about 4 or 5 years ago when I was experimenting, and I still have those to today. And I purchased another, and then Beard King would be my second purchase.
Gotcha.
So okay. I've moved away really now from starting my own businesses, just because I've accumulated the capital, to moving more towards acquisitions and finding the right fit and brand and adding my spin to it and sort of the knowledge that I've gained in the last 5 years and applying that to these businesses.
That's interesting. You know, we've had Walker on the podcast. He wrote Buy Then Build. And then Amanda, Rob, another advisor here at Quiet Light, took another approach, which is, you know, bootstrap, build, and then sell. You've bootstrapped and built too, but you're now, because you have the capital, buying. Do you find it's easier to get ahead when you're buying something because there's revenue that's already being produced? Or is there, what's the sort of logic between buying now versus taking the time to build?
Right. And to me, it's kind of a timeline thing. You know, I've always been sort of aggressive in terms of expanding. And it's to a point where if I start my own Amazon business, you know, I'm looking at a year or two out before I can really see the return on my money in terms of, right, you know, the marketing, you know, getting trademarks, getting brand registry, doing a whole bunch of things, graphics, creatives, getting all that stuff together, as well as building the supply chain in China or wherever you're supplying from. And it's really a time thing. You know, I know the work that I put into my first two businesses and the timeline it took me to get to where it's at now, which was, you know, it took quite a bit of time and a lot of work while I was obviously doing other things. And, you know, now that I have the capital, I'm able to, you know, skip those 1 to 2 years of just hard work, not hard work, but, you know, that sort of figuring things out period, and get right into the top where I'm already getting a cash flow positive business that I can just, you know, just keep adding to it, really.
Yeah. And if you hadn't started those other businesses, you wouldn't have been able to buy the Beard King. You would have gotten the capital. So there's no perfect process or method for everyone. You've got to take your own path. Sounds like, you know, you took one that definitely worked for you, and now you're evolving into a buyer instead of a builder.
And I would say for anybody who's looking to get into it, you know, it always helps to know kind of what you're doing too. You know, if you have a little experience, it's going to help, but, you know, that learning curve won't be as, you know, drastic. So, you know, right, kind of what I know. And now that I'm able to, you know, pick these businesses, I kind of have, you know, these 5 years under my belt, I can figure out what I generally want and how I can, you know, improve the businesses that are out there. So I feel confident purchasing.
So let me grill you with a bunch of questions as a buyer, given that you've just gone through the process and on this one in particular. It's mostly an Amazon business at this point. It started off non-Amazon, right? Shark Tank, Shopify, things of that nature. And now it's mostly an Amazon. As a buyer, as an entrepreneur, how much do you fear the Amazon third-party platform and things changing there and having it impact your business?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty big concern for everybody because they're thinking, oh, well, I only have one source of revenue. But the truth is, you know, if you expand to a whole bunch of different markets on Amazon, you're having kind of multiple streams of income. It's not just you had to stick to the US and that's it. You know, people always forget that there's a lot of people in the world and expanding. It's not like you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And the way e-commerce is kind of going is, you know, Amazon is kind of just out there killing everybody right now. So it seems like you kind of had to follow this path. And if you continue, you know, trending upwards, Amazon looks like it's the way to go right now.
So you're comfortable with the risk on Amazon? You don't think it's going away?
I don't think so. No. You know, I still think it's relatively new. And, you know, the idea that a couple years ago, you can never build a business like this, you know, out of nowhere. First, it was always you take it to retail, you build the supply chain. You're talking 2 to 3 years of just negotiation, relationships. And now you can build an entire platform, a business in like a matter of 2 to 3 months, which is crazy to think, you know.
Yeah.
Things change over time and you kind of have to go with the flow. And this is where it's at. You know, most of these businesses, Amazon's made it so it's automated for you. And, you know, you can run these businesses and pretty much just continue the growth. And that, whether it be on Amazon's platform or somebody else's, or it changes over time, you just have to be willing to, you know, change with that too.
And when you were on the hunt for a business to buy, were you specifically looking for something that was Amazon based, or were you looking for anything that was, you know, e-commerce, physical products you didn't care where they were selling?
No, I did like the Amazon platform just because it allowed me to, you know, I do a lot of other things during the day as well. And the one thing about the FBA platform is you can really optimize everything that, you know, I don't have to put in 30, 40 hours a week. I can kind of put it on autopilot and set it. But the other main thing was, you know, ad spend is getting kind of crazy in terms of running Facebook ads and, you know, Google ads and all that stuff is kind of getting really expensive. And I've been noticing the last 1 or 2 years with the drop shipping models have really pushed up the, you know, the cost per acquisitions for these and getting clicks. So I was kind of trying to stay away from that because that was something I couldn't really control. I couldn't really control how much I'm going to spend, you know, on ads with Facebook and all that, but I could kind of control my supply chain and have a relatively good idea of what my margins would be on Amazon.
Gotcha. Okay. I just out of curiosity, how many businesses total did you look at in the process of finding this one? Talk to us about that process, because some people say they've been looking for a long time, but they never actually looked at a full package, or they've made 9 offers. They must be doing something wrong. What was your process? How long have you been looking, and what was your process?
I would say I was looking for a solid 4 to 5 months, I would say. And I was looking pretty aggressively. Every day I would look at least any, I was subscribed to every single email list out there, whether it be QuietLight, whatever other brokerages, everything. And I don't just subscribe to the contact list. I would talk to all the brokers, and I would look through all the memorandums and all the offering materials. I looked through from the top to bottom, because to me, I was always learning something in those. I didn't seem like it was a waste of time for me to read them offering material. You know, you kind of learn how people work their businesses, and you can really gain a lot of knowledge just from reading those as well. So it was never like I just skimmed them. I read all of them, and you could see on my, within half an hour, I'd probably have signed up for whatever new business is out there and getting their offering memorandum. And so I would say 4 to 5 months of just aggressively looking for the right fit.
And in that 4 to 5 month period, how many, rough estimate, how many listings did you look at in detail where you looked at the full package?
I would say probably more than 40. I would say 30 to 40.
Wow.
And some of those weren't exactly Amazon FBA, because not that many FBA businesses are available, as you would think, in the market that fast. I mean, when I was looking, I wouldn't say more than, in a month, maybe 3-4 new businesses would pop up. That was something different, or something that fit my criteria, really.
Okay. So. Okay. And of the 35-40 that you looked at, how many offers did you make?
3 to 4 offers, I would say, I've made on businesses.
3 to 4. Did you go under LOI on any other businesses and have it fall apart in due diligence, or did your offers not get accepted until the Beard came?
I did actually do one LOI. What happened was I did the, missed it by a day. Another buyer came in, signed the LOI before I signed it, and I literally missed it by one day.
Okay.
I didn't get to it in the morning, but my offer was way too low anyway. So.
Well, how do you, in that regard, you said that when you look at these packages, you have conversations with all the brokers that you can have conversations with. Sounds like you're building a relationship with them. Do you find that building that relationship with a broker advisor that is representing that client helps if you're making a lower offer or justify some sort of offer? Or did you find that no matter what, if you made a lowball offer, whatever that lowball is, that it was received with displeasure and animosity from the broker and the seller?
Right. I would always try to talk to the broker, because when you send a lowball offer by email, it doesn't seem genuine. I mean, the lowball offer is not too genuine anyway, but when I talk to a broker, I can sort of tell them, this is what I'm thinking. This is what the business needs. This is what's missing. Kind of justify why I'm shooting them that offer. And it's just a starting point for me. It's to get the conversation going. You know, if I see, there's some room to work here, it kind of gets me more excited to say, okay, maybe we can get to the number I have in mind. That's not the number I want, but I can meet you somewhere in between just to know that you're able to work. Some sellers will be stuck on a price, or, as we've seen many times too, I know we talked about business before that just shot through the roof, and, they're asking this, they went over asking. So, I kind of can gauge where the audience is / what the seller is really thinking. So.
Yeah. So I think you've gone through the process with me twice, because I think you made an offer on one of my listings that had, 10 offers. I think if I recall, and I don't recall specifically on that one or not, did we do with the interview with the seller, did we do the video call?
Do the video call.
Did we do that with Nick, or was it just audio?
Just audio with Nick as well.
Okay, so we're doing video now. One of the things that we've done and moved to as often as possible when it's feasible is on that first buyer-seller call, we will pop on the video, and as long as everybody's comfortable with it. I found that it makes a tremendous difference in terms of connecting, right? You're in one part of the world, the seller's in the other part of the world, and you can bridge that gap. And I've been in situations, and I'm sure you've heard this or seen it before, where being likable kind of makes a bit of a difference in business, right? Especially when you're in other parts of the world.
I think one thing I've really noticed is, a lot of people that with their these businesses that they're selling. This is kind of their baby, right? This is something that they've been working on for years. And to see somebody that maybe is just looking straight at the bottom line or just wants to, you know, buy it and just, you know, do whatever they want, sellers don't like that. And, you know, they might take a lower offer from somebody who seems genuine in their intentions to grow the business. They have a passion for that business. And definitely that face-to-face helps with that, that's for sure.
Yeah. So this particular business, it had plenty of interested parties. You kind of stepped up and we got the ball rolling with Nick and went under letter of intent. It's got, what, 2 utility patents, 2 design patents, multiple copyrights. I haven't seen a whole lot of businesses like that in, you know, my 7 years of advising with Quiet Light. The drawback or the downfall of this particular business, I think, was the trends, right? I think you got a heck of a value given all of the IP protection that it has, the way that the revenue took off right before closing, right? You almost ran out of inventory because things took off because of the Amazon patent protection program.
Right.
In your searches, were you specifically looking for something with this kind of IP, or were you just looking for something with great trends that you thought you could handle and take over?
Yeah, so I was looking for something that had something that was proprietary about it. And, you know, IP is always great because another way to collect and to another source of revenue is to, you know, enforce the IP, and it kind of takes away these competitors. And the one thing I was seeing with business was there was a lot of competitors at the time, if you recall. And, you know, the IP had just gone through. So it was one of these things where I kind of was excited to, you know, get in there and start taking off these competitors. And as you saw, you know, right before, a whole bunch of the competitors got knocked off the platform, and the sales are shot through the roof. So, you know, that got me even more excited to say, well, this is just the beginning, right? So,
yeah. If I recall, we had a conversation and it was, there's a possibility he might run out of revenue, out of inventory.
And you he did run out of inventory.
Prior to closing,
we went about 2 to 3 days without nothing significant, but 2 to 3 days.
So, but we waited to close. The goal was to, no matter what, we were going to close after inventory was in stock.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk to me about your view now that you've had the business for 3 or 4 months. Looking back, you've looked at 40 different businesses, a lot of different brands. What was done right with this business, and what lesson can you share that maybe was done wrong in terms of this particular business? I don't want you to throw Nick under the bus.
Right.
I think you did an amazing job with a brand.
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
Right.
I think Nick has done an amazing job to start off with the marketing side.
Yeah.
What Nick has built in terms of marketing, and, you know, he has a real keen eye for how to, you know, put that vision out there and, you know, represent the product in a way that's it's appealing to everyone. And, you know, also, he invented the idea too, which is, you know, something that we don't really think of too much, right?
When, don't come up with great ideas. He actually followed through and got it done.
Right. Yeah. He came up with the idea, and then he made such a great marketing plan. And if you look at all how well the website is made, how well, you know, the quality of the product is, everything is impeccable that he's done. I think, you know, that was really his strengths, were just how well he executed on the marketing side of things.
And what do you think the weaknesses of the business were in the months ahead of you taking it over, or the, you know, 12 months ahead of you taking it over?
Yeah. So what I kind of looked at, the weaknesses were really just cleaning up the logistics of the business. You know, I saw that there was a lot of money kind of left on the table in terms of, you know, the cost of goods was way too much when I was looking at the business. And that's when I was already in talks with my own, you know, my own suppliers and everything, figuring out like, hey, we can drastically reduce the price and get, you know, explode the bottom line really, and get this business, make it extremely profitable from what it is. That was kind of the icing on the cake, because I was able to, you know, as you know, with this business, when we look at the numbers, it was kind of like you had to kind of dig deep to figure out where everything exactly was. And by doing that, and like you said, reading the offering materials, I was able to figure out, like, you know, if I clean up the logistics, that'll easily make this business extremely more profitable than it was. And
so you work with a manufacturer to modify did you modify the product, or just found it manufactured cheaper, less expensive, same quality?
Manufactured cheaper, same quality. I'm considering modifying it a little bit, but the price point I have without changing anything, you know, I just knocked off 80% of the value, which is crazy. I've never seen that happen off the product.
80% of the cost of goods sold?
Cost of goods sold off of the product.
Can you put that into dollars?
Sure. Right now I'm paying how much the cost of goods is right now.
Just how much you're paying. I guess people will figure out the math here, and we have to, if you tell me edit after this, I'll edit. And if you're all hearing me say the word edit, then we chose not to. Right. What I'm trying to figure out is a lot of people think about how to drive more revenue. And you've got a unique approach, which is, how do I actually maximize the bottom line? I know now that I'm an entrepreneur, a buyer, that the value of this business is a multiple of the trailing 12 months the discretionary earnings. So, did you save $2 a unit times, 100 units a month that you're selling? Or, what kind of immediate boost do you see to the bottom line?
I saved $6 a unit.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Holy cow, that's tremendous. And manufactured overseas.
It wasn't just the cost of goods, it was also the method of shipping. That was a big deal.
That's right. You've got the capital to do freight versus doing just-in-time air shipments, I believe, right?
Yeah, I had the cash flow to lock up for a month or two. That's okay with me. But, when I can take that much off the bottom line, that's definitely what I'm
hoping. That's amazing. What are you doing to boost the top line? I just said, most people focus on the top line instead of the bottom. You're doing the smart thing. But now tell me what you're doing for the top line.
Sales fix everything at the end of the day. Sales fix everything. The logistics thing, the reason I started with that first was that was a quick fix. That's something that you could do very instantly. Improving the top line, now that might require a little bit of money, a little bit of tweaking, some marketing. And what we've done with that is really expanding and being aggressive with opening up in all different marketplaces. Canada, Australia, UK, Germany, I've just kind of hit the ground running with those and in the works of launching in all those different countries.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's what we've been working on now. And, sending inventory over there and, figuring out the VAT stuff and all that stuff I've done before. It's just kind of, even as we talk, some countries are only going to see maybe a 5 to 10% increase in sales, but, it's still 5 to 10%.
Yeah.
It still adds to the bottom line and still you're leaving money still on the table and, you don't want to do that. So that's what we've been focusing on right now.
And how did you choose those countries, just out of curiosity? What kind of research did you do, or is it just countries that you're comfortable with and you've done it before?
I've done it before, and as well as I did a little research on the European ones, because as you know, it's a little expensive to open up the VAT and all that stuff if you're not choosing. But working with other sellers and the experience, I know kind of what countries do really well. If you have a North America Amazon plan, you can easily open up in Mexico and Canada within within an hour. It's not anything. The listings get sent over and it's not a lengthy process. I just had to send the inventory. So
did you have to translate the Mexico?
Oh yeah.
Ads and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to translate it. They have the translator on there and then you have to run through each of the listings as well, because even when they get sent over, the listings get converted, they don't end up being right anyway. So you kind of have to, with a fine tooth comb, kind of go through that anyway. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Maybe we can do an update in a year to talk about how those international markets went and what kind of additional revenue was driving. Let's talk about how you've learned to do what you've, accomplished here. Are you tuning into podcasts? Did you go through any training programs? What is the source of your experience? Are you, who do you listen to? What do you read? That kind of thing.
Right. I'm kind of a simple guy in the sense that I really listen to what Amazon puts out there too. They have tons of seller university information, which is great. But when I started, watching YouTube videos here and there kind of helped. I never paid for a course or anything like that because I kind of learned by trial and error. I don't think you need a course per se, but you're going to make a lot more mistakes if you don't have like a clear path to follow. And there's a lot of information that I would say it's not really too useful for people or kind of misleading out there too. So it's kind of hard to find. But, using Amazon's material and just going through trial and error, I say, your first product is not going to always work. And I think people are under the impression if they buy a course and they do this, that this is a home run. It's not like that. It takes years of just trial and error, really.
Okay. So you're doing your own research, you're watching, reading Amazon stuff and what they put out versus paying for courses and programs and going to events and things of that nature. I just had a call this morning with somebody that is like Nick. He's 12 months after selling his own business. And one of the big reasons he sold was he felt isolated. It was growing and there was risk, but he felt isolated and alone. And he did the same thing. He didn't have a mastermind group or anything like that. How do you overcome that? Do you have friends and colleagues that are also Amazon sellers that you talk with? How does that work in your life?
I'm in contact with a ton of people that we talk almost every day about what we're doing in sales, you know, international sellers, see how they're getting, how what they're doing on Amazon. So they are massive. I'm not part of a 1,000, 2,000 group mastermind group, but I am part of, you know, groups where big power sellers, we kind of talk to each other and figure out what's going, what's working, these new changes Amazon's made. So we do talk about that every other day.
Okay. And how many hours a week are you putting in on Amazon altogether or Beard King altogether?
Beard King by itself, I would say I'm putting in about, you know, 15 hours right now. 15 hours.
A week.
A week, yeah.
And you're making more money than most people make when they do graduate from law school. I think you've chosen the right path here.
Yeah, I think I'm on to something for a while now. So, I'm really happy with the outcome and grateful for, you know, everything. So,
well, look, you did the work. You took the risk. You were in school and focused on building your own businesses as well. You studied up. You took the risk. You worked hard. The harder you worked, the luckier you got. And here you are today buying a business with something very rare, great IP and a whole lot of protection with a lot of growth potential ahead of it. It's growing in the bottom line, which is fantastic, the way that you've renegotiated cost of goods sold and shipping. I'm excited to hear what it does over the next 6 to 12 months with expansion to the other countries and some other focus.
Yeah. Q4 is coming up and we're super excited. It's about to, you know, we're already up all across the board in revenues and it's just about to take off now. So it's going to be interesting what happens in the next couple of months.
That's great. Let's get every man in America growing a beard and using the Beard King products. That's
the dream.
You got to do it too, though. You got to grow that beard.
Yeah, I'm going to try. You know, it's a patchy beard, but I'll work on it.
For anybody that does get over to the Quiet Light YouTube channel, I think it's Quiet Light Academy now. You got to take a look at Nick's beard versus Raj's beard and my beard. You and I, Raj, are pretty pathetic. We don't have much to go on at all. Nick's
got a crazy beard, though. He's
crazy beard. On it. Absolutely. Well, listen, this has been great. I want to appreciate you sharing your story. What you've accomplished is pretty damn impressive, and I'm excited to hear what happens over the next 12 months. How can people learn about what you're doing or reach out to you?
Well, you can find me on YouTube at Raj Patel, and I'm going to be pretty much talking about everything from selling on Amazon to how to launch your product, as well as just telling stories of what I've done over the last years that's worked for me and putting some information out there that people can use. And, you know, if they're trying to, whatever they're trying to accomplish by selling online, and to learn sort of what I've done and help them out pretty much. So you can check me out at Raj Patel on YouTube.
All right. And everybody watching will be expecting you to grow a beard as well, or at least, you know, have a fake one on now and then. Raj Patel on YouTube.com.
I'll be on YouTube for the progress, maybe.
All right. Perfect. All right, man. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Joe.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.